Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And today we're going to devote some time to a question we received from a listener by the name of Oscar.
That's right.
Yeah. We can't see his last name for privacy reasons, which is interesting because this whole podcast is going to be about the idea of privacy. What is it? Does it exist? Is it an illusion? Is it dead? All the various...
Do we care too much about privacy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oscar, a longtime listener, brought this up, and he sent us a really very thought-provoking long email about this, so we won't read the entire email, but just to kind of get this conversation kickstarted, and for a context, we'll just read a little bit. His email says, I just listened to the Eat Popcorn podcast, and I was glad of how it moved from the subliminal messaging to the privacy issue. In the podcast, Julie expresses concern of how she feels that she is giving away too much of her personal information to vendors and in general to the world out there. That makes me ask, why are people so paranoid about sharing information? I understand that in the past, the security and responsibility of your information lied with the individuals. If I moved across the sea and upon arrival said my name was John Doe, they would have no other choice than to believe that I was John Doe and start gathering information from there. But, and this is a big but, I mean, font size 100 plus. We are living in this so-called era of information. Information is not only power, it is becoming part of the basic structure of our civilization. I'll admit that as a civilization, we are still learning how to deal with it, how to process it, how to use this new power we just got. But that is the whole point. We need to admit to the fact that we need training and upgrade, if you will.
I love the point about crossing an ocean and changing your name, because that's one thing that instantly comes to mind with all these. The more we're logged into these different accounts, and we have all these, we have identification numbers, and the government knows where we are, and the state government knows where we are, that you can't just, pull a Don Draper and just walk up somewhere else and declare yourself a new person, which is an attractive idea. Everybody loves the idea of being able to start over, the idea of just getting in your vehicle and like just driving and just wherever it takes you, you're going to wind up.
Well, think about our ancestors too. Many of our ancestors here in the United States had that experience. I mean, I can tell you two different, relatives that changed their name upon arrival to the United States, for political, reasons, so on and so forth. So, Yeah, I mean, we don't have that. I guess you could call it a luxury, even though those were pretty hard times and
yeah.
people were escaping very horrible circumstances in order to attain a new identity.
Yeah, because I mean, we're broadcasting from Georgia, where you know all the really you know hardcore Georgians you know descended from people who came over on the sex criminal boat. So. And I know we have Australian listeners out there. You know, it's like, I imagine it's the same thing there. There's this sense of going to a new, any kind of frontier colony mm-hmm. environment. You know, people went there and they might have had kind of a crappy past, but they were able to start over. And then if they screwed up again, they just needed to move further out into the wilds and just can, as many start do-overs as you need till you get it right.
Right. They didn't have all this looming information out there about right. what they just ate or what they just spent money on or, yeah, their criminal records.
Yeah.
Essentially. So it made me, I think it's just a very intriguing question. It made me think, is it really just an illusion, this privacy? Is it some sort of remnant of our past, particularly Americans, this idea of rugged individualism
yeah.
that just doesn't exist anymore?
Because it's worth noting that the word privacy is some linguists consider it untranslatable into various tongues.
Mm-hmm.
Many languages lack a specific word for it, and you end up with complex descriptions. Like I believe in Russian, it ends up meaning something about like basically solitude. And the original our English word privacy comes from the Latin privatus. Does that sound right?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Separated from means separated from the rest, deprived of something, and often you know ends up having a legal or governmental use.
Right, and when we live in communities, we always know that there's some sort of trade off for living in a community and being supported in a community. Right,
right.
Like you're not just no man is an island unto himself.
Right,
and if he is, he might be the Unabomber. Right.
Right. Well, yeah, and it goes and it spills over into the whole issue of like libel. Suits and slander, you know, mm-hmm. who can be slandered, who can be liable, like different law, different rules apply, you know, if you're a private citizen or if you're a public servant or mm-hmm. if you're a top tier celebrity. So, it varies greatly depending on who you are and how out there you are in the world.
Yeah. And I wanted to read just a little bit more too, concerning this illusion of privacy. He talks about a worldwide civilization when the borders are gone, which I think is very interesting, right?
Because mm-hmm.
So much of our lives are being played out online. So more on that on another email, he says, but in your everyday life, the car you drive, the gadgets you use, the clothes you wear, the way that you dress your kids, what you do for a living, even the way that you walk, the way you comb your hair, they all give away the story of who you are, but that's fine. It is the way that information is supposed to be, free. Information is valuable, but it's not a physical thing. It baffles me why people want to treat it as if it was, building vaults for it, restricting access to it, when the fact is that the more information flows, the easier it is to keep it safe.
Well, one could make that argument.
Yeah, yeah. And he does. He goes on to the argument and talking about the sort of transparency in society. I mean, even surveillance, right?
Right.
Cameras that if we know that we're being taped, if we know we're being looked at, that we're not necessarily going to do things outside of the law.
Right.
So again, interesting fodder here, because I understand what he's saying. There's so much of ourselves that we're already revealing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it feels like, for me personally, that if it's being used for consumption purposes, for businesses, that it doesn't feel like maybe part of the bargain that I was hoping for.
Right. I can't help but think of like old, the old biblical accounts of say like Adam and Eve, where it's like they live in this perfect society when they're naked. But then when you introduce, sin and all, they, suddenly they have to cover up. They have to use leaves.
Yeah.
It's like the birth of privacy. And so there's this, I can definitely understand the idea of, you know, if there are no, you know, if everybody's naked in, you know, an informational sense,
mm-hmm.
then there wouldn't be any issues, you know, because what are you gonna hide, right? Gonna use it against you? You know, you can't be blackmailed, right? That's like any movie about blackmail, it's like that's always seems to be one of the options on the table. It's like, well, I'm just gonna come clean about this political scandal before someone can blackmail me, or, you know, and it robs
right.
the blackmailer of their power.
Well, and even WikiLeaks, right?
Right.
Which is, it's been pretty illuminating information. And so many people would argue that this is necessary, right?
Keep governments a lot of people do make that argument.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I, just to bring up the naked analogy too, I was sort of thinking to myself, well, why do I have a problem with privacy, or the, what I perceive of as the lack of privacy, right, in our technological days? Because I don't have anything to hide. I lead a pretty mundane life, but I think it's still.
Well, that's exactly what a person with a dark history would say on a podcast.
Sure they would. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. My name is Julie Douglas. Okay. It's that idea.
Yeah.
Again, and so for me, it's this question of, is it just like this antiquated American idea of individualism that, you know, that is melting away as Oscar talks about civilization, a worldwide one where the borders are gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then there are also plenty of issues, like how far do you take privacy? It's like, you know, there's that old adage, which is thankfully disappearing in the United States, but the whole thing of like, well, what a person does in the privacy of their own bedroom is their mm-hmm. business. And generally that brings with it the assumption that whatever is going on doesn't need to be known, and that if it were known, there might be some sort of repercussions for it, you know?
Right.
So,
I guess the mystery is gone.
Yeah, you know? But it's also, it's like the idea that privacy, like Oscar's argument that the more, the less privacy there is and the more the information is free flowing, mm-hmm. the safer we are. But clearly history and even in modern times, there are plenty of situations where privacy saves human lives and makes human lives safe in societies or under governments that are less tolerant or just completely intolerant of different ways of life, different
right.
political ideologies. You know, it becomes necessary for us to hide from one another because sometimes the eyes that are looking, are powered by nefarious brains.
Okay, so that is, I think, a really interesting point and a good way to talk about the Patriot Act.
Yes.
Right? We sort of debated about whether or not we would talk about it, but at the end of the day, this is a really good example of why privacy matters. Mm-hmm. And just for everybody, just a little reminder about the Patriot Act that, you know, after 9/11, it brought sweeping changes to the way the government accesses and utilizes information about private citizens.
Yeah.
It's been criticized as undermining civil liberties, particularly parts of the counter-surveillance law.
Right. How easy it is to get wiretaps and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to get a court order. The FBI can also search telephone, email, and financial records without a court order. The problem here is that that sort of wide latitude can be used outside of the context in which it was originally meant for.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's supposed to be to go after terrorists, but, and then, you know, you do have the FBI saying up until 2005, no, it's never been abused. Okay. So now you have other reports that have surfaced, from firstamendmentcenter.org, New York Times, and Business Week. They all reported on this, that actually the Patriot Act has been used outside of its original context to remove homeless people from train stations, to pursue drug rings, and to collect financial data on random visitors to Las Vegas. So that is random there. So you know already, and we know, how the human mind works and historically how we have behaved. And when you have that sort of, what I think in this case is an unbalance here, right, of power,
mm-hmm.
that it can be used very readily against people. And as you say, if, you know, thankfully we live in the United States, and at least we think that we live in a society in which our privacy and our individual rights are respected. But, you know, still there's gray area there. And certainly there are other countries in which people are not treated as fairly.
Right. And, you know, like the period of McCarthyism wasn't that long ago when
oh, right.
you know, digging around to find evidence of communism in people's past and people becoming blacklisted.
All of Hollywood.
Yeah. And at risk of sounding like, you know, some sort of a radical, it's anytime a government is given power, anytime a people hand over power to a government,
mm-hmm.
Generally, it's a little naive to expect the government then to hand that power back over when they're done with one particular goal or another, especially if that goal is something, say, like defeating terrorism or, mm-hmm. you know, or winning the war on drugs or something that is largely unattainable anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, you got, that's, those are the things that we need to consider when looking at privacy. And I do like Oscar's idea that it's beneficial, you know, that there's, we are going to obey the better angels of our nature and use it the right ways. I do think there's that possibility, but we have already seen, as I talked about, that it's been used outside of its context, at least the Patriot Act has. And, we will never know the far-ranging effects of the Patriot Act until much later.
Right.
A lot of that is because even the reports have been filed, much of it has been redacted. So you can, if you go to look at that report, you might be able to see that the subject was a female or a male, but pretty much everything else is going to be blacked out. So
right.
It's hard to say when you have a government that's not being fully transparent itself. And
right.
Of course they will say, you know, we need to do that for security reasons. And, you know, there's an angle there that, that is relevant. But I think what is interesting to me about the Patriot Act and, where we as a society sort of came into our technological, I don't know, what would you say? Like our maturity, maybe?
Okay.
These things seem to have dovetailed at the same time. Right. So after 9/11, you have the Patriot Act and you also have people using the internet in unprecedented numbers and sharing information.
Right. Our personal lives flowing onto it.
Yeah.
I remember when I first got on MySpace. You young listeners may not remember MySpace, but it existed and I think still does if you're a band or something.
Yeah. You can still visit it.
Yeah. But I remember it felt like this frontier where it was like, it was just a whole bunch of young people who wanted to hang out or date each other, you know? So you didn't really think about, well, all this information you're putting out there. And then later you realize, wow, that was really stupid of me. We just talked in another podcast, the Cyber Immortality one, about how we're different people. The person I was a year ago isn't who I am now. And the person a year from now, isn't who I am now either.
And certainly your MySpace person isn't definitely not the same person you are now.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's like the MySpace you from 10 years ago wasn't concerned with about getting a job somewhere necessarily or what his or her, you know, political opinions or social opinions at the time, were compared to what they might be at, you know, a decade later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see how that's changed. Like, I feel like, a lot of us are like that, where what the internet is has changed in that time. And then who we are has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But, to a certain extent, a lot of the data we put out there, they say it's like putting information on the internet is like, putting pee in a swimming pool. There's not really a good way to get it out again.
You can't
really delete anything.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
Well, and what I was thinking, too, is because of the Patriot Act dovetailing with our increased involvement with the internet, is it on a subconscious level? Of course, we don't have any scientific data to back this up, but so this is just a question. But is it on some level, was that sort of when we lost our privacy virginity? You know, like we had, a lot of us were very fearful at the time. And certainly we know that the government was able to pass the act because of that. There was a juggernaut of emotion following 9/11. And we all know that we act irrationally when we're controlled by fear, that our brain makes different decisions. So once we sort of handed over the reins that way, at least symbolically, if not everybody was affected by the Patriot Act, did we then sort of say, okay, and then we're on this thing called the internet and we're exchanging all of this information and it's really neat, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay for me because I feel like I'm getting something in return. I'm getting this instant gratification.
Yeah, it's like, you know, It's like the, you know, the revelation that, oh, the government's all up in my business. You know, you get used to that idea. And then, you know, it comes along and the phone company's like, hey, we want to know where you are at all times. And you're like, all right. I mean, the phone's pretty cool. I can play Scrabble on it and use the map system to figure out where I am in Austin, Texas, because I don't know if we would have made it to the live. Recording.
No,
we wouldn't have made it to the coffee shop and then back had it not been.
Yeah, we literally took out your iPhone and were following the dot as we were.
So maybe I take that as the comforting bribe, but I'm giving up something in the process.
Well, it's interesting, too, that you're talking about the iPhone, because there's a German Green Party politician. His name is Malte Spitz. And he went to court to find out what his cell phone company, Deutsche Telekom, knew about his comings and goings, because he was just sort of interested about what sort of information they were amassing. He found out that in a six-month period from August 31st, 2009, to February 8th, 2010, Deutsche Telekom had recorded and saved his longitude and latitude coordinates more than 35,000 times.
Wow.
It traced him from a train on the way to Erlangen at the start of the day and then through the following night when he was back home in Berlin. So oftentimes this will happen. They'll take the coordinates just because they're the signal is sort of being rebooted. But when they looked at this case, that wasn't it. It was just randomly sort of tracking his coordinates, which begs the question, what do they want with all that data?
Right.
You know, and obviously they can say, well, maybe he went here and there and we can give this to marketing firms and better pinpoint his interests and translates to bigger dollars. That's a possibility. But it's still sort of interesting how, and all the legalese that we sign off on with our contracts for cell phones or even, you know, for downloading an application, we're sort of giving away that right to our privacy when it comes to that.
Yeah, that giant wall of text that comes with any system contract or device contract. I mean, who reads that? I think I heard one NPR story about a guy who read, or maybe it was a woman who read the contract, but it's because for a living they write those contracts.
Right.
But do normal people actually, you know, leaf through those? It seems like you'd reach a fatigue point about one paragraph in.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of legalese, I think, right? Yeah. Is to fatigue you to the point where you're like, oh, fine, I'll just sign off.
By paragraph 6, it's talking about like the river of the soul and bounding the spirit to objects and things like that.
Right. Yeah. And you're like, okay, river of soul. I just want this application. So, I mean, it comes down to that sort of idea of who does own our identity then. And particularly as we begin to store more and more data about ourselves, cloud computing and otherwise, you know, how is that going to be played out in 20 years? Or, you know, are we forever going to be tethered to a company that owns our online projection of ourselves?
Yeah, because, I mean, typically these companies have to sort of play PR niceties when talking about this, about who owns the information, or they kind of skirt around the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, like, take something like Flickr. You know, you put a lot of your life onto a Flickr account. I mean, to the point where, like, if you own a Flickr account and you were to die, like, the Flickr account would kind of be an online memorial to you, you know? And you might want that to live on, or you might want that to live on for someone that you knew. And, who owns that? Who owns your profile with all your thoughts and details and correspondences?
And if you are deceased, do you any longer have rights to those photos? Can they be used by someone else?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sort of brings up some good questions about that. I wanted to talk a little bit too about when you're talking about MySpace and you know, who you were then, who you are now, and these different iterations of yourself that exist. Google CEO Eric Schmidt predicts that every young person one day will be entitled automatically to change his or her name on reaching adulthood in order to disown youthful hijinks stored on their friends' social media sites. Here you go. I mean, this idea that, you know, companies might sprout up to actually whitewash your identity is very possible. It has been talked about in the industry.
Yeah, it's kind of like this idea that it's like, all right, the 30-year-old me needs to get this new job. I need to hire somebody to kill the 20-year-old me who's still out there on the internet looking like a total goofus.
Well, and think about the 15-year-old today.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the sort of information the 15-year-old has. And assume that the 15-year-old is very open with whatever information
because
she's going to share.
Because that's the thing. For a lot of us, like you say, I was talking about when suddenly the internet was here. And like for a large number of us, we remember that time. We didn't grow up with the internet. It just came into our lives like this mysterious piper with a bunch of rats following him, you know?
Right.
And we followed him. And it's been a weird experience ever since. But other people have been born and grown up, in the Piper's, under the Piper's spell, So they have a totally different idea of what privacy is and what it should be.
Yeah, and that makes me think about Sherry Turkle, who has written a lot about technology and our relationship to it. And she makes that point. She says, just because we grew up in the internet does not mean that it is grown up. Does not mean that it is fully formed now.
Right.
And it's still the Wild West in many ways in terms of legalities. And even sort of the way that we interact in it, psychologically.
Right.
But again, this 15-year-old, I mean, 5 years from now, what might we know about her? You know, I mean, think about all the different ways that we can collect data on her. We Google Earth, we can see where she lives.
Mm-hmm.
We know her Facebook status, Twitter, Foursquare, her blog missives.
Right.
So we have access to her thoughts, possibly. You know, maybe what she just purchased and where. Her coordinates, her IQ, her SAT scores, her grades, does she have a criminal record? I don't know. Her medical records.
Which X-Man she would be, according to an article.
Right. And think about that. I mean, that's a lot of layer of detail. And, you know, what kind of control would she have in five years over that?
Or in 30 years from now, she's running for public office and someone's like, she was on Team Edward back in the twilight days. Do you want to vote for somebody who was on Team Edward?
Right, I know, because that is how fickle us human beings are, right? We might look at that and go, oh, God, no, totally not Team Edward. So that kind of makes me think about the future of data mining, especially for younger generations who have been accused of oversharing. And again, to go back to Google CEO Eric Schmidt, this is from an article, Google and the Search for the Future, from the Wall Street Journal. He says, I actually think most people don't want Google to answer their questions. He elaborates, they want Google to tell them what they should be doing next. And then he gives a scenario. Let's say you're walking down the street.
Walking.
Here we are.
All right.
Because of the info Google has collected about you, we know roughly who you are, roughly what you care about, who your friends are. Google also knows to within a foot where you are. And, Mr. Schmidt then leaves it to a listener to imagine the possibilities. If you need milk and there's a place nearby to get milk, Google will remind you to get milk.
Google knows you need milk before you know that you need milk.
Knows it from your list, right? It will tell you a store ahead has a collection of horse racing posters that you like, that a 19th century murder that you've been reading about took place on the next block. So,
are these the things that really come up? For you? I mean, I know you have Jack the Ripper fascination,
but is it also
horse posters?
No. This is just in Mr. Schmidt. This is this scenario.
I thought it was you.
From the article. Okay. No. I don't have any horse racing poster fetish. But Mr. Schmidt says that a generation of powerful handheld devices is just around the corner that can fulfill this need, and they can be adept at surprising you with information that you didn't even know that you wanted.
Wow.
So this is the point where maybe you cease to actually think about things and are told or suggested about what to do.
So Google comes in. Basically, they say, not only was free will an illusion before, we're going to go ahead and completely dispel it and just take over all your decision-making.
Will and privacy are an illusion. Sorry about that. But hey, you need some bread. So you might as well pick that up with your milk. Yeah. So, I mean, it does. We still can't answer the question, is it a fair trade-off what we're doing right now, the information that we're sharing? But it does make me wonder if we're sort of opening our digital veins a bit too much and letting the information flow.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how privacy evolves or changes in the years ahead. I mean, maybe it reaches the point where we end up having to have a different view of it from a very early age, you know, where your mom takes you aside and says, all right, this is the kind of stuff you blog about or whatever it is by that point. And this is the kind of stuff that is completely private. Maybe there becomes this more of an emphasis on the separation. I don't know.
And I mean, we've already absorbed much of this mindset anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not too big of a deal. Maybe we aren't necessarily eroding our civil liberties or our privacy. But I think that Oscar brings up a really good point about that, and especially the point about how, since we're in the middle of this, we actually need to look at it and know that it's not actually fully formed and think about it. So thank you, Oscar.
Yeah. Well, hey, I have some email from another couple of individuals whose last names will be withheld for privacy reasons. First, we have one from Mark Anthony. And Mark Anthony writes, how is it, y'all? They wrote out y'all.
All right.
Like the podcast, lots of food for thought. Just like to comment on your podcast about audio hallucinations. I used to live in Alaska after my parents dragged me up there as a child. I would chop wood and watch the aurora borealis in the extremely long winters. In that super quiet environment, laying back in the snow, I would hear music often as I gazed up at the sky. I've heard that this is a common occurrence among people who have seen the aurora. Can you shed some light on this? Or did I just have a bad case of cabin fever? Oh, the music was always some symphonic classical stuff, which I enjoy, but I listened to metal, at the time, a lot of thrash. Strange. So that's interesting.
Well, I kind of wondered, too, is that during a period of 24-hour daylight in Alaska?
Yeah.
Because everything I ever learned about Alaska is from Al Pacino and the movie in which he went nuts, or someone went nuts because
Insomnia.
They were... Is that what it is?
It's okay. Insomnia. It's a remake of a European film, which is, in my opinion, far superior.
Well,
the original stars Stellan Skarsgård and has a lot more shades of gray in terms of the characters.
Don't even get me started on La Femme Nikita and the bastardization of that and... In the American version. But yes, so, I don't know. That's the question I have, you know.
Huh.
What were the other circumstances surrounding that? But I do think it's very interesting that.
Well, I've seen the aurora borealis, if I remember correctly. I'm told I've seen the aurora borealis. That's the thing, because I was a child in Newfoundland.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was when, my mom was in the hospital, to give birth to my, youngest sibling. Some friends of theirs like took us out and supposedly showed us the aurora borealis, but the only thing I remember is reading a dinosaur booklet in which one dinosaur like eviscerated another one. So
that sounds like you, Robert Lamb, as a small child.
But I totally missed out on this, or totally it didn't make an impression on me at the time.
Yeah, but you were like dinosaurs, evisceration, high pretty lights.
Yeah,
you pale in comparison.
Well, maybe a listener will. Out there will share their similar experiences or just, you know, get us straight on the whole aurora borealis and music thing. I have another one here from JJ. JJ says, "Hi, I'm listening to the Does Your Dog Love You podcast. I was wondering why it is that we like to watch dogs and other animals play so much. For that matter, why do human beings love to have fun? Or other animals? I see my dog playing all the time, and she never seems happier. She even seems to be using some type of imagination while doing it. Where does fun come from? From a strictly evolutionary standpoint, fun should serve some kind of function to pass on one's genes. In that sense, it's hard to imagine fun being beneficial for us, because I don't see where it accomplishes this. What do you think? Maybe this would be a good podcast. Keep up the great work."
Huh, very cool.
Yeah, well, that's some interesting food for thought. We may have to... explore that later. I know that, you know, as we discussed in that particular podcast, it's fun to watch our dogs play because mm-hmm. we have that connection with them, and it actually releases oxytocin in the brain.
That's right, yeah.
And so we get this feel-good mother-infant drug coursing through our brain when we're interacting with this dog that we find adorable because it kind of sort of looks like an infant.
Well, also, I was thinking too about little kids and when they play and they have, you know, fun, I guess, mm-hmm. in air quotes, but, you know, a lot of people have said that that's the way that they're working out their own creativity and also working out their social roles.
Yes.
So
well, we have that whole podcast on creativity.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about that too. So it's maybe another way to come at problems, we know, through play.
Yeah. Well, it instantly comes to mind, little boys playing, sword fights and whatever on the playground. They're kind of learning to fight in the same way that a kitten wrestles with things because it's kind of learning to kill small animals.
Yeah, yeah. But, I actually remember doing that as well. I mean, my brother and I would
killing small animals.
No. Play fight.
It's like an episode of Dexter.
No.
That childhood. Well, cool. That's some awesome food for thought there. And if you haven't listened to that episode and are a dog owner, do check it out and give us your feedback. And if you have some feedback on this particular episode, oh, by the way, if you happen to be Georgian or Australian, I don't mean any offense about the whole sex criminal boat thing.
He's talking about
way back. Yeah. And we all have a touch of that in our
past. We're all debtors colonies and so on and so forth. Yeah.
If you have any cool feedback on the whole privacy thing, let us know. I'd love to hear even just some amusing anecdotes about how your previous online self has interfered or in some way affected your current online self. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook as Blow the Mind.
And you can also drop us a note at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.